I seriously don't know how to open one of these. What if we said, you know, I seriously don't know how to open one of these.
Well, I imagine there would be like theme music that you're going to add in later. So we can just be like...
Welcome to Cartridge Base Radio, the number one podcast for the words cartridge-based and radio. I'm Donald, and I used to run a website, and no one looked at it. And I'm joined by Brad.
Hello. Oh, yes. I also ran a website where I played every single Genesis game that was ever released in the U.S. to the joyous readership of, like, two or three people that... really seemed to like it.
I was one of them. So
our potential audience has just been cut in half because we're working together on this. Like, I was your one reader on your website. You were my one reader on my website, and no one's gonna listen to this.
You know, we can give it the good old college try, but we decided it's much easier to talk into a microphone for 45 minutes than run an entire website day in and day out with one reader.
It's a little easier to do the work. It does have the downside of I can't do this at the office when I'm supposed to be working the way that I ran all my websites.
Challenge accepted. We will do one of these with you trying to be real stealth at your desk. Like, hey Bob, take these reports and, like, are you podcasting?
No.
No.
This microphone's always been here. I use it to do the bank reconciliations. Accounting words.
What's a podcast? So, anyway, this is Cartridge Base Radio. It's a show where we talk about Sega Genesis, the ultimate gaming system ever.
And probably some other things. Having run a Genesis blog, I can tell you we're really limiting our audience if we keep it focused entirely on Genesis.
I just wanted to establish that we were Sega Genesis kids who were those weirdos on the playground who, like, no, the Genesis has good games too, guys.
Who needs Zelda? It's so overrated.
Have you heard of Sword of Vermillion?
Let me tell you about Cape Chameleon. He can turn into anything. It's like Mario 3, except no one's ever played it.
Yeah, I owned it. Does that count? No, we're going to talk about all sorts of games with cartridges and CDs and just... It was a good name. It was such a good name. But if you've made it this far in, congratulations. We're pretty impressed. It only took us a half hour to work out the kinks to get this... working. We are tech wizards.
You know, I think the important thing is at some point soon we should probably talk about what we're going to be discussing on the show today, which is Street Fighter 2, I believe.
That's actually how this all started. You made a joke via email, and what, 77 emails later, here we are. We didn't overplan this in any way, shape, or form. So... you have an interesting topic on Street Fighter 2, so I will let you bring that to the table.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion on this game. It's over 25 years old, I believe, at this point, and it's been pretty much picked apart. Pete Holmes did some fantastic skits that you can see on YouTube with interviews as though they were, like, setting the thing up. So there's been a lot that's been discussed, but one thing that I haven't heard too much about is, what is M. Bison's plan?
Well, it's win the Street Fighter Championship and rule the world.
Yeah, and if you beat the game as M. Bison, you take over the world somehow by winning a karate tournament that doesn't seem to be terribly well organized. I don't think it's been on TV. Like, I think the number of people who are actually would even be aware that M. Bison won this tournament is limited to the 15 or so people that are, like, in his temple watching him beat up, you know, Guile or whatever. This is also starting to segue into one of my greatest fears about doing this podcast, is that I'm going to start talking about the characters. And in doing so, we're going to discover that for the last 25 years, I've been pronouncing everyone's names wrong. So if you hear any of that,
I will help you by laughing at you if you do that. So if you're like Geely,
well, you know, I watched the Street Fighter movie a bunch of times to prepare for this, to get all the pronunciations down. That does not seem to have been a worthwhile use of my time.
No, I mean, it is the greatest film ever, so that's a good use of your time, but it's not a good movie. So you said it was a karate tournament, and when you brought this up, I started wondering, is it actually a karate tournament, or are these drunk people outside of bars just wailing on each other?
Well, that would be more like actual street fighting, which they show kind of in the intro screen. It's just like two like regular guys just like wailing on each other's faces. And then when you actually start playing the game, and it's like all these like martial arts masters, and it's sort of organized, like they're flying around the world to fight each other, but it's also kind of like you just fight E. Honda in his bathroom. Like
maybe it's like a worldwide beer crawl.
Maybe. You know, and like I said, there doesn't seem to be any sanctioning body. There's no referee. You know, if this is a tournament, like E. Honda's just like, hey, come on over to my house. I got the hot tub set up. We'll wail on each other for a while. And then, like, we can each have a soak. It's two separate tubs next to each other. It'll be nice. You know, and no one's making a record of this. So, you know, like, who knows if he actually won. Yeah.
You know, E. Honda thought it was really important to have two tubs so it wasn't like a creepy invite. It's like, yeah, we're going to fight, but we're not going to take a bath together. So, I mean, that was pretty good of him. I imagine he's a drunk too. I'm now just have this canon in my head that they were drunk.
Probably. That does make a lot of sense. But again, it's just like two guys in a bathroom allegedly fighting, and no one's witnessing this. So, you know, they go back to the Street Fighter offices or whatever, and it's just like, you know, Honda, I'm starting to wonder if you're actually winning all these matches, because, like, there's no proof. And I'm sort of beginning to suspect that maybe you're not entirely truthful about your claim that, oh, yeah, me and Chun-Li totally did it after our battle also. Like, you might be lying.
So is the Street Fighter offices, is it, like, next to one of those bring your taxes here that has someone dressed as a Statue of Liberty out front twirling a sign, and it's actually just M. Bison in a bad mustache, and he's like, oh, welcome to the Street Fighter offices, how many wins did you get? And Ken's like, 1,000.
I got all the wins.
How many wins can you get? Because that's how many I got.
You know, I'm just kind of wondering, like, these guys probably weren't, like, aware of each other prior to street fighting. So, like, you're Zangief, and you're this great Soviet wrestler. You're the best wrestler in all of the Soviet Union. And you think you're just, you know, the best thing. You enter this tournament. Like, what do you think Zangief thought the first time he saw someone throw a fireball?
What? What was that, son?
What am I gonna do? Like, no one told me that, like, that guy could throw fire and that one has a claw.
Yeah, he's just like, I have amazing chest hair and that guy has three blades and a hockey mask. How is this fair? Answer, it's not. Yeah.
I'm very hairy and that guy breathes fire.
Oh, look, that guy's leg disconnects from all its joints and flies across this room and kicks me in the face. I have a Speedo.
Like, there were probably, like, some regular guys that, you know, entered this thing that you don't even see in the game because they just got annihilated immediately.
Yeah, those two guys from the beginning, they're like, yeah, we're going to win this fight. And then Ryu's like, Hadouken! And then the guy is just literally charred meat on the ground and everyone's like, oh man, the cops are coming. Ryu's running through the streets of Tokyo. He's like, oh man, what do I do? And he runs into this little office, and there's a man in a red suit sitting there and says, hello, do you like street fighting, sir? That's my headcanon.
You know, I played in an indoor hockey league once where the building that we played in also had a pizzeria and a place to get your taxes done.
Yeah, okay.
So I could kind of see the Street Fighter office, like, maybe sharing that. Like, you just come down and play some street hockey and get a pizza, and then you join an international karate tournament. And, like, 2 weeks later, you're running the world. Because it turns out that you could make sonic booms by waving your arms around.
Now, is this a thing where they're like, I won the world, and it's just kind of a message board society where they're all like, oh, no way, M. Bison won the world. We got to stop him now. And like, oh, we're going to fight you in front of the bodega.
You know, probably, you know, the rest of the real world has no idea that this is going on. Like, M. Bison's just going to show up and be like, oh, I'm in charge now. Everybody's like, sure.
Walks into the UN, I won Street Fighter, and they're like, we have no idea what that even means. And he's like, where do I go to address the world, because I now run it?
Who are you? Oh, I'm M. Bison, the evil tyrannical dictator of Thailand. And like, the Thailand president stands up and he's like, what
does this mean? That Blanca is just like the weirdo in the group who comes in green body paint and an orange wig, and he's like, I can make electricity. Do they even actually throw fireballs is the question. But or is Hadouken just a way to signify to the other people they have to fall down because a fireball just got thrown at them? Like when you go pew pew as you're a kid playing cops and robbers.
Are you trying to imply that the entire Street Fighter tournament is just a bunch of people LARPing?
You know what? Street Fighter might be a bunch of people just LARPing.
Because that would explain a lot.
Hey, we went to the Great Wall of China and we totally had a fight there. And just other tourists are like, what? Are those people okay? Should we call the authorities? Like, Jeff, just don't lock eyes. Just walk past them. And just think about the people in the background that, like, cheering in those games. They always kind of look suspicious. Like, they're like, just cheer so they don't pull out a gun and shoot us.
They don't seem overly alarmed. Like, if I saw somebody get hit in the face with a fireball, I would probably be kind of concerned. But they're just kind of going along with it, you know. And if you think about, like, the Blanca's village, like, these guys are just, it's a bunch of fishermen, it's, you know, on the river, they're on a dock or something, and, like, if you are just fishing, and then all of a sudden you see a big green monster, like, fighting this guy who's, like, throwing fire at it, that would be really alarming. And they seem pretty cool with it.
It's when you see LARPers in the park, you stop and you watch, and someone's like, oh, what are they doing? And you lean over, you're like, oh, they're LARPing, and then you have to explain it, hoping you don't seem like you're a LARPer yourself. And so those people in the background are like, okay, so now that guy thinks he just threw a fireball, and that man fell over because he got hit by the fireball. And someone was like, why didn't he do a changeup? What are you talking about? Street Fighter's making less and less sense with this conversation, or more and more sense. I don't know. Which is it?
Yeah, you know, you can kind of just imagine, like, Ken being like, oh, I totally just jumped over your head. Let me get behind you. And you turn around. I crossed you up. Jab, jab.
How many times during a fight do you think Ken said, my dad owns a Jag dealership? And it's like, he's there because he's got some money to put into the getting people together for these street fights, quote unquote.
What's up with Ken's stage anyway? Because it's just like, he's kind of at the docks and there's a tugboat with all these people on. It's like the most crowded tugboat you've ever seen.
Well, I mean, he's there to pick up a shipment for his dad's dealership.
That does kind of make sense. Except for all the...
And then... Oh, they beat up a car.
Yeah.
I bet his dad was so mad. He's like, hey, Ken, where's the X-92, whatever? And he's like, me and my friends kicked it until it broke. It's like
we kicked it a lot.
It's like, seriously, Ken? You know how much that car costs? I don't know, like $500? I mean, Ken is now just an idiot in my mind. This is great.
I was trying to impress this Chinese girl, and I punched it a bunch, and then she kicked it, and her leg turned into a blur, and then there was no car.
And his dad just, he doesn't say anything, he just stands up and he walks out of the room, and, I mean, he goes and he pours, like, 3 fingers of whiskey and just one-shots it, and then stares at his wife, and they just mutually hate each other because of Ken.
Ken's just like, yeah, it's cool. My dad's a douche.
My dad never lets me do anything. He's like, hey, you have to pay for that car you guys kicked. So I brought, can we just kick boxes that fall down next time? I mean, Zangief's the only one with kind of a credible background, because it looks like a Russian pro wrestling match, and like, hey, let's watch an actual pro wrestler beat up these guys who are like, I just flame kicked you. And he's like, I do not think so. And just
and then Vega, I think, is like fighting at this fancy restaurant that has a cage for cage fights in the middle of it. Like, you go out and you have this nice Spanish dinner and you listen to some flamenco music, and like a guy with a claw gets into a cage and just like stabs somebody to death, and you're like, man, this is a nice place, I'm gonna take dates here.
It's like some tourist is like, oh, this seems dangerous, and his wife's like, why don't you just go in there, honey, we're only visiting Italy once, it'll be super fun. And then he gets stabbed in the face and their holiday is ruined. It's like, I don't know much about Italy, but I don't think there's cage fights in the middle of restaurants.
You're not going to the right restaurants, you know. And
he was, any in Italy or Spain?
Spain, yeah.
Spain. Oh, well, I mean, I know less about Spain, apparently. Some restaurants have people who come to your table to play violin. He comes to your table to, like, murder,
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I clawed you in the face. Why weren't you wearing a hockey mask like me? What's wrong with you? This is a dangerous thing that we do. Put on your hockey mask.
So we established Ken's dad owns the dealership. Do you think Vega's dad owns the restaurant?
That is a definite possibility. It's also maybe Bison owns the restaurant, and he's like, this is my front for all my illegal activity, but he really just owns a restaurant. And the illegal activity is that there's a crazy Spanish guy in the middle of a cage stabbing people.
He doesn't own it. He's just the night manager. Oh, he's like, Vega, go fight a patron. It'll be great. It's like, walks over. I challenge you. Hang on, babe. I got to fight this guy. Did I tell you my dad owns a dealership? And that's how that fight happened.
It explains so much.
What about Akuma, though?
I mostly played Championship Edition. I played a little bit of Turbo, and then I played Super a little bit. I didn't really like Super that much, so I don't have a ton of experience with Akuma.
Have you ever used Ken or Ryu?
Yes.
Okay, you've used Akuma.
Oh, okay. So he's basically like what they've turned every character into by Super.
He's a man on fire who's very angry. He's probably that guy who didn't get invited to the LARPing, but he showed up anyway, and they're like, oh man, Jeff's here. He's calling himself Akuma again. Oh, jeez.
Who is Jeff? I am Akuma, the god of death and fire and karate.
We have to let Jeff stay. He's 21. He can buy us beers.
Jeff's just like way too intense for everybody else. They get annoyed.
I'd also like to think when the new challengers came around, like somehow this had bled into some sort of wider social conscious that the Street Fighter LARPing crew didn't know about, and actual people trained in martial arts showed up. So, like, Ryu's going up against Fang Long, and just gets destroyed. And Fang Long's really, really confused because he thought he was entering an actual karate champ or karate tournament of some sort. And then everyone's just really weird around him.
What did you do?
He's like, you broke his arm. Come on, man. He's like, I'm so sorry. Wasn't this a karate champ? Yeah, the best karate champ. The winner gets the world.
It's like that scene in Three Amigos where they find out that El Guapo's using real bullets.
Yeah. You're not supposed to kick people in the face. You're supposed to shoot a fireball out of your hand, dick.
You're supposed to say that you kicked him in the face. You're not actually supposed to do it. What the hell, man? I'm going home.
Fang Long's like, I'm really sorry, guys. Can I drive you to the hospital? I don't know what to do here. What do I do? And Bison's like, I guess you get the world. They just have a necklace that they pass around that has a globe on it.
Dhalsim has to decide whether he wants to wear his championship necklace or his, like, awesome skulls necklace that he wears everywhere. Which must just be awesome when you're, like, trying to go shopping and you're like, oh, I'm going to put on my skulls and go down to the drugstore and get a pop.
So what we're seeing is what they imagine they look like. But in reality, he just went to Hot Topic and got some of those glow-in-the-dark skulls and tied them together, and he wears them. And he just walks around in, like, little yoga pants, whatever. And people are just, what is up with that dude over there? And he's like, I'm a yoga master. Actual yoga master's like, I don't think you're a yoga master.
He's just, like, kicking people in the face at yoga class. And the instructor's like, that's not yoga. That is the opposite of yoga. That's assault.
He keeps yelling yoga fire over and over. We don't even know what this yoga fire means. He actually went on later after the Street Fighter tournament and started that thing called hot yoga.
If all your knowledge of yoga came from Street Fighter 2, you would not understand why, like, sometimes, like, some guys are like, oh, girls in yoga pants, that's awesome. Because, like, you know, Dhalsim wears, like, a burlap sack with a rope tied around it that's cut off at the knees.
I mean, it looks like it's hiding a Depends under there. Like, he has bladder control issues, but he still really wants to be a karate championship. Like, they all had to come up with their own little bit in order to get into this club.
You know, your friends are going to be like, yeah, chicks in yoga pants, man. You're like, I guess? Like, yeah, it's kind of nasty, actually.
No, it's guys in burlap sacks. And they're just like, you can't come with us. I was like, you're a weirdo. So, I guess I'm going to go to the park and play Street Fighter and win the world, suckers.
All these exotic locations in the actual Street Fighter tournament entirely takes place in, like, a park in Baltimore somewhere.
They just have little paper signs hung up on the picnic tables in a circle that say, like, China. And there's a guy who actually comes. He's not very good at things, but he's like, China! Japan! He just stands on the table and yells the country's name out. And they're whisked away to a magical world in their minds.
Thailand. Really? Thailand? That's where our boss is from? That's the last fight? Yes, exotic Thailand.
No, there are two fights in Thailand. Sagat's like, hi guys, I'm Sagat. I work at the Froyo stand across the street. I saw what you guys are doing. I'm pretty good at tiger knees. And they're all like, oh, tiger knee.
I'm like super tall and I have an eye patch.
He's actually not tall and he doesn't have an eye patch. He has to tell him his character and everyone just accepts it to be true. Chung Lee's a 42-year-old guy who I don't know, washes cars at the car wash.
I think it would be weird if everybody else was kids and then Chun-Li was a 42-year-old guy. Like, that just adds an extra layer of weirdness to it.
Have you ever driven by LARPing, Brad?
I've...
There's that guy there. He's like, yeah, I know about the Blade of Destiny. I have two of them. Like, there's only one. I have two. I'm like, oh, he's old, so I guess he knows what he's talking about.
So, like, as the Akumas get older and kind of mellow out, they turn into 40-year-old Chun-Li guys. That makes sense.
Who's playing Chun-Li this season? Now we have to play Street Fighter again someday with all this vast knowledge we have just accumulated. It's going to be hard.
Were you any good at Street Fighter?
I'm actually very good at Street Fighter. People I know won't play me at Street Fighter.
I only played it pretty much against the AI. My friends would come over and we'd play it, but like I played it all the time and they didn't, so I would, you know, just beat on them for a while and they'd get sick of that. But I mostly played against the AI and I got pretty good at that. But, you know, if you ever just need to see me taking down a peck, you know, just get a recording of me attempting to fight Ryu, because it's like 40 minutes of me just getting fireball trapped and nothing works. And finally, I have to just pick Bison and do Psycho Crushers across the screen for 40 seconds because they didn't program the computer to know what to do about that.
Yeah, you don't give Ryu any distance. You gotta just be right up on him. You like just kind of kiss on the nose, like, "Hi, Ryu." And he's like, you have to get back so I can say Hadouken and put my arms out. Everyone's else like, "No, we're not gonna do that. You're OP." He's the guy who's like, I just did a hurricane kick followed up by a burning dragon upper punch. And like, oh no, I'm down. No matter what they do, he's got something more powerful in the can.
Oh, I jumped over your fireball and I kicked it. No, you didn't, because I did a dragon punch right after the fireball. So you didn't hit me. You're never going to hit me.
And Ken's like, I have all those guys' moves. He seems pretty good. I'm going to I have his moves too. And Ryu's like, oh, come on. Dad owns a dealership.
You do this every time.
We're the only two with the same moves. It sucks. Dad owns a dealership.
I'm going to be the best fighter in the world. I'm going around the world to prove myself.
Hey, Dad, look, I won Street Fighter. I'm the king of the world, so can I have the dealership now? No, no, Billy, you cannot have the dealership. My name's Ken now.
Alternatively, if this whole thing actually is supposed to be taking place in reality, I'd like to know, like, what you say when you get to the gates of the Air Force base to the guard there that'll let you in to fight an Air Force major. Because it's...
Oh, that's pretty easy. You walk up and you're like, I'm here to see Guile, the weak-ass little baby man, and he is coming for you hard. He's like, look at this mohawk. Is this what a weak-ass baby man has? No. And his superior is like, that's not government-sanctioned hair. You need a haircut. It's like, Sonic Boom! I mean, a guy who can Sonic Boom, you don't tell him he can't have that haircut. That is just dangerous for your life. So now that we imagine it's LARPing, we actually have to figure out what it would be if this was actually a real thing. Because like the moon landing, everybody would be glued to their TV at that last round against M. Bison. Because like, the hero to set the world free or... the guy in the red Nazi suit.
But if M. Bison wins that match and you're watching on TV, you're just like, oh, okay, I guess we're going to live in fascism then. That's a bummer.
It's like, I hope he holds another one of these tournaments so we can turn the fascism around next year, maybe? The new challenger's like, no, we're coming to challenge you. Do you have to fight, like, daily to hold on to your fascist regime? How does that work?
Well, I guess once you conquer the world, you probably have, like, an army or something. So, theoretically, they can hold things down for you, and you can focus on whatever the rest of your plan is.
But, I mean, you lose the thing. Do you just call the army? You're like, oh, I guess you now belong to Guile. And they're like, oh, I mean, what rule changes are there? Oh, you're not fascist anymore, I guess.
Yeah. Honda won the tournament, and All he was trying to do is just prove the legitimacy of sumo, so I don't know exactly what this means for the world order, but sumo is not a fake sport, so there's that.
I guess sushi is the food we all eat now? Hot dog competitions? Does that seem like a thing? Okay, well, I'll try next year to get the fascism back, guys. And they're like, oh, thanks, Bison. I mean, that's literally what it'd have to be. I mean, every country in the world would have to come together and say, we're going to have this big karate championship, and whoever wins gets the world for a year. I mean, it's a lesser scale Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat's for, you know, a lot. But this is just what's going to be the dominating political fashion for the year. Is it going to be fascism, or my dad owns a car dealership?
Or sumo. But that's just when you play Civilization and you can decide if you want autocracy or freedom. Like, sumo isn't one of the choices.
It's in one of the drop-downs, I'm pretty sure. Just... Gandhi's like, have you tried sumo? If you don't try sumo, I will strike you with nuclear missiles. Zangief's like, do you want to try communism for a while?
I would have to dig up the manual for the game, but it had character bios for everybody. And I think Zangief's motivation was that he was trying to prove the legitimacy of the USSR, you know, kind of like that they're as good as anybody. And like, by the time the game came out, the USSR had collapsed.
I mean, mission accomplished. Way to go, Zangief.
You know, it's like they didn't update it in later versions of the game.
So he's just a guy who is sitting around like, I'm gonna prove that the USSR is legitimate thing. Like, hey, Zan, because his friends call him Zan. They're like, Zan, it collapsed. You don't have to prove it anymore. He's like, no, it's coming back. It's, I mean, like the South. They tell you they're going to rise again. He's like, USSR will rise again. I have missiles in Cuba.
So that probably covers Street Fighter 2 about as well as we'd need to.
I mean, what would we be living under if Balrog won? Boxing?
I guess. For a second, I confused Balrog and Blanca, and I'm just like, I don't know what Blanca would want. Like, fish? Just be like, our world order is just give me fish and everything's fine. But, yeah, I mean, I guess Balrog would want to just, you know, box and gamble.
I imagine him and Honda got together like, we're going to totally prove that sumo and boxing are real sports. And the other is like, we do MMA. You guys are really limiting yourself. But then Honda comes flying across the room as a torpedo, and they're like, oh, whoa, did not see that one coming.
The big guy just flew across the room.
Those moves where they fly like that, have you ever thought they just kind of land on their feet gracefully? But if you're flying across the room head first in a torpedo shape, you can't bring your feet in under you and land. I mean, you're just going to, like, plank in E. Honda's bathhouse, and that floor has to be next.
Slide across that wet floor and slip right out the door down the street. Honda's like, hey, come back.
Run into the wall and, like, break your neck, and the other guy's like, I think I just won this fight. Ooh.
Yeah.
trying to bury the body in the middle of the night. That's a task.
Speaking of E. Honda's bathhouse, you know, as we like to do, he's got in his background, there's like a light up sign that's like Mount Fuji, and then this samurai or something who like holds up a sign and it flashes back and forth. And it's like this was 1990. They didn't have LED stuff back then. Like, this is amazing that he has this light up flashing sign that can do all this stuff. You know, if he had focused on technology instead of making sumo seem better to the rest of the world, like, we probably would have gotten like all kinds of like flat screen TVs like 10 years sooner.
it wasn't projection because it would have been shining on the fighter.
Yeah.
So it had to be a bank of just like CRT TVs. And probably what happened was Japan's like, we can only send one fighter, and we got to prove that sumo is a thing. So
right, we're like, hey,
we're gonna put the country's power of technology behind him to make him look better than he actually is. And that's how he got the wall of CRT. But that's not good in a bathhouse. You got
no
a wall.
No, that's a steamy place.
They're gonna short out constantly. I mean, maybe that's the power of Sony. Like, you can use this in a bathhouse.
And you're gonna want to.
He's the only fighter from Japan?
No, Ryu's from Japan.
Oh, I thought Ryu was American who went to Japan to train.
No, him and Honda are from Japan.
Ken came to train with them, and that's why they have the same movesets.
Yes, that's why they have the same movesets.
No, I did not watch the Street Fighter anime, I swear. I have it on VHS.
I think I had that at one point. I think I got it at Media Play. Ryu is there to find the next great challenge. Honda wants to prove that sumo is as good of a fighting form as anything else. Guile is trying to avenge his friend's death. So is Chun-Li. But it's her father.
Chun-Li's a police officer, isn't she?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you'd think just public assault would go against being a police officer, right?
Yeah, nobody seems to be really too concerned that, like, China is sending its police across the world to just beat the hell out of people that aren't even criminals.
Vega is probably a criminal.
I mean, some of them are.
There are skeletons in that closet for sure. It's like, I want to join this fighting, but I'm going to wear this mask for, you know, just to make me look good. Not so when the TV camera's on me, people are like, hey, there's Franklin. We know where he is. Go, go, go. Either Street Fighter is very real and can change the global landscape in one fight or at the end of a series of fights. Or it's a bunch of guys who LARP in a park. The world just may never know.
Yes, those are the only two possibilities. So should we move on to our next segment then?
We should, because we're coming up on quite a bit of time here.
All right. So you want to explain this concept for our listener?
Okay, listener. You're listening to us right now. You got your headphones in. You're like, I can't believe I just sat through that last segment. You're our hero. Sometimes we love old games, but sometimes old games are not as good as we remember in our hearts where we cherish them. And you go back and you look at them and your head says, man, that game did not age well. What we're going to do is debate a game that one of us loves in our heart and the other knows is a complete pile of crap. Brad, you picked one. Do you want to introduce the thing that you're going to completely lie about for the next couple minutes?
I believe the one that we were going to do for this episode was Crazy Taxi on the Dreamcast, which is a favorite of yours and a complete disappointment to me. Has been, so I don't have fond memories of Crazy Taxi, and then I went back and was like, oh, this isn't as good as I thought it was. Like, I've always been disappointed in Crazy Taxi, but you seem to like it for some weird reason, so
let me explain Crazy Taxi to you.
Sure.
Because it is a pure and beautiful thing. Crazy Taxi is about getting a high score.
Yes, by doing stuff that isn't particularly fun.
Well, I mean, to this day, I do enjoy Dark Souls, so repetitive action for meager end results seems to just be a problem that I have with my life. But no, learning the city and driving around, picking up fares, I mean, come on. If you run out of time, the person stands up in the back of your taxi and just jumps out. That's like the ultimate game design right there.
I seem to remember, and unfortunately I didn't get a chance to have a refresher on Crazy Taxi this week. I did play Street Fighter 2 again, but I didn't get around to Crazy Taxi because I wanted to not suffer. If I remember correctly, the key to getting good times and scores in that game was that you could get a turbo boost by up and down shifting.
Yes, also by being crazy.
Yes, lots of crazy action.
I actually do like this game. I was one of those people who picked up the Dreamcast the day it came out. I was like, holy crap, Sega has a new system and it's going to destroy anything Sony brings to the table. So I went and picked up one. I was like, oh man, this Crazy Taxi game and Soul Calibur are my complete choices to buy with this thing. So I bought them. And man, I still love my Dreamcast, which I don't know why I'm holding on to that dream. But mine still functions. I have Street Fighter versus Marvel 2. Crazy Taxi is just, I don't know, there's something that happens to my brain when I start playing Crazy Taxi. I'm like, I have to find the best pattern to get the highest score. The physics don't work anymore. It's like playing pinball.
You slide into an object and you just come to a complete stop. I just remember like driving everywhere, like just constantly shifting in and out of first gear. And just imagining like if I got into a cab where the driver was just like first gear, second gear, first, second, you're like throwing you back and forth all the time. But I mean, that's not really like a fun thing to do. Like you're driving around, you're constantly like up and down gears and trying to power through turns. I think the strongest case that you can make against Crazy Taxi is that a couple years later, Grand Theft Auto 3 came out, and there's a mini game in Grand Theft Auto 3 where you drive a cab, and it's just like a tiny, tiny, tiny portion of that game, but it's everything that Crazy Taxi is, and it's better. It's more fun to do cab missions in GTA 3 than it is to play Crazy Taxi. And then there's a whole rest of a game beyond that.
I cannot actually argue with you at that point. Yes, Grand Theft Auto's taxi missions are better, but I would like to counterpoint with official Kentucky Fried Chicken partnership. People say, take me to the Kentucky Fried Chicken, and you're like, oh, I'm taking you to the Kentucky Fried Chicken, son.
That is pretty amazing. And then when you combine that with the Offspring on the soundtrack, which totally holds up and doesn't feel very 90s at all.
It's like, we have four songs, and we are going to play these over and over.
Four songs from the same Offspring album. I think that's just the first four tracks on that album. I don't think they actually like listened and are like, what are the good songs? They're just like, just give me the first four off of Americana. I don't even care.
Really, when you're like, what are the four good songs on an Offspring album? The answer is there are no good songs on an Offspring album.
It's just like, would you maybe rather have Smash Mouth, which is also terrible, but still better.
You get those Smash Mouth boys in here. I want to show them the Kentucky Fried Chicken partnership. There was like Shortcuts and sure, I mean, it's not as fleshed out as Grand Theft Auto, but it's a different kind of thing where you learn the city and then you got the gear shifting, the boosting, you got to remember paths, and it's like a test of all the things that you can make yourself suffer through to just watch that money thing get one bigger.
I'll be perfectly honest, and all the time I play that game, I don't think I ever realized it was all taking place in the same city. Like, I think I thought it was randomly generated. Like, I couldn't bring myself enough to care to notice that I could, like, follow the same routes and get better times.
So what you're saying is that you were terrible at Crazy Taxi.
I'm saying I was not very engaged by Crazy Taxi. I did okay. I didn't die like immediately. I could usually do a couple affairs. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't bring myself to pay enough attention to memorize the layouts or anything.
So in preparation for this show, I did actually drop it into the Dreamcast and fire it up. And as much as I love it, I haven't played it in a long time because, you know, other games. It's... Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Your anti-Crazy Taxi argument is not wrong in any way, but I still love Crazy Taxi on some level. It's just a little bit harder to play now.
One thing I used to say when I was running the Genesis website is Shining Force is not going to be as much fun right now as it was in 1993, but it's still fun, you know. So Crazy Taxi to you has diminished, but is it still enjoyable?
I think if you were into Crazy Taxi, you can find the fun again. But if you went out and cold bought it now, you would be having a bad, bad time.
Yeah.
Really bad time. And also, you're a liar about Shining Force.
I don't enjoy it as much as I did when it first came out. I think we both like Shining Force.
Yes. I mean, that's going to be an argument, heart versus heart, and we're just going to ignore any flaw that Shining Force has.
Yeah, we'll save that for another show. You know, the part where you can just, like, park your tank in the middle of the field and watch all the enemy mages waste all their magic points on it.
That's what a tank's for.
Yeah, and bad AI. but, no, I love Shining Force, and... that one is going to be an interesting debate if that comes up and we're just arguing over which of us loves it more instead of, you know, like trying to see any flaws.
Obviously, that's going to end in tears on one party's side. As an official, you know, respectable podcast, we probably should rate Crazy Taxi in its current form.
Okay.
I would say it's a solid 5 fares out of 10.
All right. I'm going to leave it to the guy who actually enjoyed Crazy Taxi at some point. I think that's probably a more fair assessment than having me, you know, just like give it like a 1 or something.
And... Maybe four out of 10.
Yeah.
That's probably more fair.
Yeah.
It's a fair. I kind of wish I hadn't put in the Dreamcast and just remembered it as being like rendered in Unreal Engine with the most realistic physics man has ever seen with that randomly generated city you just mentioned. That, man, that sounds like a pretty good game. Somebody make Crazy Taxi 2.
None of which actually happened. It was a product of its time.
It's out on iPhone. You can actually unlock Hulk Hogan.
Why is Hulk Hogan in Crazy Taxi?
I don't know. Why is Crazy Taxi on the iPhone? It's not good either. I mean, it's an iPhone game. Of course it's not good. So, Street Fighter Crazy Taxi. I mean, that completes our show notes.
Yeah.
We have recorded a podcast.
Yes.
That's pretty magical. I would maybe give a spoiler for next or teaser for next week, but I don't, you know, maybe vamp for a second while I pull up the Google Doc.
Sure. Well, you know, I think the one thing that we haven't done in our podcast quite enough is just say cartridge-based radio a whole bunch of times like we were supposed to, because that's how marketing works. I know this because I am Mr. Business.
He is actually wearing a tie right now that says Mr. Business.
Mr. Business sounds like just a terrible professional wrestler that would just like come out and like lose matches to guys that you've actually heard of.
His finishing move is called cooking the books.
His finishing move doesn't exist because he's never won a match. That's Mr. Business.
In his mind, he has won matches. By losing, he is winning. I mean, that's how he explains it.
This devastating finishing move is just like a punch to the face. Like, that's his move.
That he's receiving, not giving.
His finishing move is he gets hit.
He's like, I'm doing really good. Oh, my nose.
Oh, Mr. Business is down.
Mr. Business got the business.
I was just going to say, wouldn't his finishing move be called giving him the business?
I mean, that might be a different thing in the adult section of the video store. And next week on Cartridge Based Radio, I said the name, we have a talk on Tomb Raider, where we will dive into Lara Croft, international criminal?
Yes.
Followed by Brad thinks Grand Theft Auto 3 is still fun. That's next week on Cartridge Based Radio, so don't go into it now. Because, I mean, then we don't have a show for next week, and we'll be totally embarrassed.
Well, we kind of already dove into that a little bit, but yeah, I will defend that game.
If you want to hear our thoughts on why Lara Croft may be an international criminal, and hear Brad talk about very low polygon faces.
Okay.
Tune in next week. Brad, thank you for joining me for this riveting talk on LARPing / world domination.
Our listener would be very disappointed in us.
I'm Donald, that's Brad, and we will probably see you next week. Outro music.
Is our outro music just you saying outro music?